Hello, and welcome to the Commander Theory Podcast. I'm Nick Beatman, and today I'm going to be talking all about the new commanders in Lost Caverns of Ixalan and the Lost Caverns of Ixalan commander decks. A lot to get through. I'm going to be focusing on something a little bit different than my typical commander set reviews. Rather than going through every single commander in these two products, I'm going to be just going through the ones that I think are most interesting, that add the most to the format, and that have the most secret tech. But before I jump in, I want to briefly talk about my Patreon. If you head on over to patreon.com/commandertheory, you can support the show and get sweet benefits, including ad-free episodes, for as little as $1 a month. If you aren't ready to be a patron yet, you can help me out by rating or reviewing the show wherever you get your podcasts. All right, let's jump right into it. I'm going to start with Akal Pakal, First Among Equals. This is 2 and a blue for a 1/5 legendary creature human advisor. At the beginning of each player's end step, if an artifact entered the battlefield under your control this turn, look at the top 2 cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the other into your graveyard. This is a slightly different take on mono blue artifacts than we've seen in the past. The way this reward is structured, of course, because it's triggering on each player's end step, you're going to want to do things to get artifacts on your opponent's turns. So that could mean things like running Liberator Urza's Battlethopter, or say Vidalcan Orrery, or Leyline of Anticipation, just ways to grant your artifacts flash. It could also mean you're just running artifacts that naturally have flash, like Mithril Coat or Shimmermyr. Even crappy stuff like Goblin Firebomb or Gerard's Hourglass Pendant, just like 1 mana artifacts with flash and a bunch of text that doesn't matter. I actually think that's fine in this deck because they do become sort of like instant speed cantrips, and they offer a little bit of card selection as well. They're like sleight of hands. So I think that's worth running, even though the like quality of those kinds of cards in a vacuum is pretty low. Other fun things with this deck, of course, the way it's worded, it's not just non-token artifacts. So if you have ways to create artifact tokens on your opponent's turns, you can get value that way as well. So that could mean something like you're investigating on your opponent's turns. I like the idea of running maybe like Trail of Mystery if you have like a high instant and sorcery count. But you can also just run things like Stern Lesson, the instant from Brothers War, 3 mana, draw 2 cards, then discard a card, create a tapped Power Stone token. So with Akal Pakal out, you're going to get that Power Stone token. You're going to get Akal's trigger at the end step, and you're going to get to do that sleight of hand. Other things that work well is treasure production, even map token production, if there's any decent stuff that works at instant speed. And then in terms of win conditions, I was thinking you could maybe run things like Urza's Saga and the tokens it generates, or you can run Nettle Cyst. There's a couple things in this color identity that get power and toughness equal to the number of artifacts you control. If you can generate a number of those, it actually does become a pretty significant win condition because you're committing so many artifacts to the board multiple times in a round of turns. I think that could be a way that you end up winning the game. Overall, a pretty interesting commander, very different from the other mono blue options for artifacts, and I think it's a great addition to the format. The next commander I'm going to be talking about is Aklazot's Deepest Betrayal. 3 black-black for a 4/4 legendary creature, Bat God. It has flying and lifelink. Whenever it attacks, each opponent discards a card. For each opponent who can't, you draw a card. Whenever an opponent discards a land card, create a 1/1 black bat creature token with flying. When Aklazot dies, return it to the battlefield tapped and transformed under its owner's control. And the reverse of this double-faced card is Temple of the Dead. It's a land, it taps for a black, and it has 2 and a black tap transform Temple of the Dead. Activate only if a player has 1 or fewer cards in hand, and only as a sorcery. So Aklazatz is the newest take on a discard commander, and it's encouraging maybe some gameplay that isn't super fun because it really wants as many opponents as possible to be empty-handed. So you're going to be running things like Oppression, Bottomless Pit, Necrogen Mists, just a ton of ways to get cards out of your opponent's hands. So you can get, as you know, multiple cards off of that attack trigger. It also has some potential for a little bit of like self-feeding synergies with that whenever an opponent discards a land card trigger. I like the idea of pairing Sadistic Hypnotist with Aklazatz because you can sacrifice a creature to Sadistic Hypnotist, target an opponent, make them discard two cards. If one of those cards is a land, then you get a bat token. You can sacrifice that bat token to the Sadistic Hypnotist and make him discard another two cards. The way your opponents are going to respond to that is just, well, they're kind of priced into discarding their non-land cards in order to just like keep you from getting more bites at the apple. That could increase the effectiveness of your discard. So it's a new option for mono black discard. I would describe this as probably like less fun than Tiny Bones for your opponents, but more fun than Turgrid. I think that's where I'm at with this card. In terms of like the transforming the reverse side, like getting it, once it's at Temple of the Dead, getting it back to Aklazatz, I think that's not too hard to achieve. I think this is possibly one of the easier ones given what your deck is already doing. If you're running just like really aggressive discard strategies, I think you can easily get at least one player down to one or fewer cards in hand. So I think Aklazatz might be one of the easiest ones to just like keep him in the face mode. All right, moving on to the next commander. This is Inti, Seneschal of the Sun. It's one and a red for a 2/2 legendary creature human knight. Whenever you attack, you may discard a card. When you do, put a +1/+1 counter on target attacking creature. It gains trample until end of turn. And then whenever you discard one or more cards, exile the top card of your library. You may play that card until your next end step. So I really like this commander. This is a fantastic way to turn all those card neutral red rummaging effects into card advantage. So red has a ton of cards. I mention them all the time, like Tormenting Voice, like Wild Guess, like Thrill of Possibility, so on and so forth, that mostly just improve your card quality a little bit. Maybe they help you get things into the graveyard if that's relevant, but they certainly don't give you card advantage. Inti changes that. Because you're getting this additional impulse draw whenever you cast one of these types of cards, you're potentially getting more value and really like increasing the number of cards you have access to, which seems great, especially since Inti comes down so early. I think with this deck, you're really going to want to keep your curve as low as possible. Notably, Inti also works really well with cycling cards. Especially because the way he's worded is you may play that card until your next end step. So if you're cycling cards on an opponent's turn, it doesn't matter if you only have like a couple mana free, then you're going to get to your untap step. You're going to have all of your mana available to cast these cards that you're impulse drawing. So I think there's a really fun engine going on here. I think there's a lot of cards that are synergistic with this effect, even in just a mono red color identity. Like just being able to fill your deck out with cycling cards is fantastic. In terms of win condition, I think that might be the trickiest part of this card because it doesn't really offer a clear path to victory. You're certainly going to be casting a lot of spells, so maybe you could do something with Spell Slinger, run like Fiery Inscription, Gutter Snipe, those kinds of cards. That's a possibility. But that seems like a very, very slow path to victory. Like if your goal is to get 20 Fiery Inscription triggers in order to win the game, well, that's a slow slow prospect. One thing I haven't really talked about so far is like just the attack trigger. It's nice that we're getting a lot more like whenever you attack type cards lately, so that you don't have to risk Inti himself. If you just have any other dork sitting on the board, that can potentially get your trigger. And it's sort of like a cycling or a rummaging effect in that you're discarding one card, you're getting your impulse draw, which you hopefully will be able to play. So I think there's some play there. The plus one, plus one counters, I don't think are incredibly relevant. There is a tiny bit of modified synergies that you might be able to play into. Kami of Celebration, 4 and a red for 3/3 spirit. Whenever a modified creature you control attacks, exile the top card of your library. You might play that card this turn. And then whenever you cast a spell from exile, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. So both halves of this card kind of synergize with what Inti is trying to do. You're trying to impulse draw. You're trying to keep your curve low so that you can play as many things as possible. And then getting the +1/+1 counters on Inti is going to help you trigger this. And this is also going to put even more +1/+1 counters on things. So it's worth looking into those types of synergies for this commander. But I think figuring out a win condition might be the trickiest part of this card. I'm not too concerned. I think there's just a lot of fun with this gameplay of just churning through your deck, playing tons of cards, like keeping your curve low, just playing kind of the most magic of anyone at the table. That seems really fun to me. But let me know if you can think of a good win condition that would really synergize with what this deck is doing. Next is Ogier Axanil, Deepest Might. Forgive me if I mispronounce any of the Nawat card names. It is not my first language. So Ogier Axanil is 2 red-red for a 4/4 legendary creature god with trample. If a red source you control would deal an amount of non-combat damage less than Ogier Axanil's power to an opponent, that source deals damage equal to Ogier Axanil's power instead. So if you're going to deal 1 damage, if you're going to ping something, Ogier Axanil will deal 4 damage because his base power is 4. If you pump him up, he'll deal even more damage. And then when Ogier Axanil dies, return to the battlefield trapped and transformed under its owner's control. Then Temple of Power is the reverse. It's a land. It taps for red and has 2 and a red tap, transform Temple of Power. Activate only if red sources you controlled dealt 4 or more non-combat damage this turn, and only as a sorcery. So we've got a link to a sample list in the episode description. This kind of just looks like a group slug deck. Anything like Mana Barbs or Burning Earth, even Sulfuric Vortex, Spellshock, is going to deal a ridiculous amount of damage when Ogier Axanil is on the battlefield. Like, just imagine having Ogier Axanil and a Mana Barbs. Your opponent taps 4 lands. They take 16 damage. I think you fill your deck with things like that. Maybe you have some of those like Spell Slinger rewards I was talking about earlier, Gutter Snipe and Fiery Inscription and the like. And then you can run instants and sorceries that'll help you like sort of churn through your deck. You run additional burn spells just to help lower your opponent's life totals. Acidic Soil seems great. Price of Progress seems great here. And you just try to burn your opponents out. All these symmetrical effects are going to, well, not be quite so symmetrical when they're dealing, you know, 1 to 2 damage to you and 4+ damage to your opponents. When possible, you're going to look for efficient ways to pump up Ogier Axanil. I prefer things like artifacts. I'm thinking like even Bone Splitter or Ace's Baseball Bat or like Dire Flail, Champion's Helm. Just artifacts that kind of stick around if Ogier Axanil dies, but have like really efficient equip costs so that you can pump up his power really quickly, and then suddenly you're dealing, you know, 6 damage off of your Mana Barbs or 7 damage off of your Mana Barbs. But I wouldn't invest too many card slots in that. I think dealing 4 is good enough most of the time. All right, moving on to the next one. This is Ogier Kazlem, Deepest Growth. It's 3 green-green for a 6/5 legendary creature god with trample. Whenever Ogier Kazlem deals combat damage to a player, reveal that many cards from the top of your library. You may put a creature card and or a land card from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest on the bottom in a random order. And then when Odric Haslam dies, return it to the battlefield tapped and transformed under its owner's control. The reverse of this card is Temple of Cultivation. It's a land that taps for green, and it has two and a green tap, transform Temple of Cultivation, activate only if you control 10 or more permanents and only as a sorcery. Quick visit to the hypergeometric calculator reveals that you have a 96% chance of hitting a land off of Odric Haslam's combat damage trigger if you've got 40 lands in your deck. And if you've got 30 creatures in your deck, then you have an 89% chance to hit a creature off of Odric Haslam's combat damage ability. Assuming all six damage of Odric Haslam hit your opponent, that of course is going to be reduced if they're throwing a chump blocker in the way and you trample over for less, and it'll be more if you're running some efficient ways to pump up Odric Haslam's power. With this commander, I would really want to invest in haste granters. There's not a ton in a mono green color identity, but you can run Lightning Greaves, you can run Hall of the Bandit Lord, and you can run a ton of land tutors like Crop Rotation, like Sylvan Scrying, like Nylea's Intervention, a whole bunch of cards, Expedition Map, a whole bunch of cards that can find your Hall of the Bandit Lord and guarantee that when you're dropping Odric Haslam on turn 5, you're able to immediately attack and get that big trigger, drop in a creature, drop in a land. Other than that, this kind of seems like mono green good stuff. Like, green naturally wants to run a lot of creatures. You're not going to have too much trouble finding enough to fill out this deck and make sure your hit rate is pretty high. If Odric Haslam dies, it doesn't seem that difficult to transform the Temple of Cultivation. Like, assuming you connect on turn 5 and you get both that creature and that land, you're going to be up to 8 permanents at that point. And then next turn, you play a land, you cast any permanent, and then you've got 10, you can flip it up again. Another god that's relatively easy to flip back over. Okay, next up is a spicy one. This is Kutzil Malamet Exemplar. 1 green white for a 3/3 legendary creature cat warrior. Your opponents can't cast spells during your turn. Whenever one or more creatures you control, each with greater power than its base power, deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. This card is, I think, very useful in the 99 of a lot of lists. It's just kind of like a Dosan the Falling Leaf, just a way to keep your opponents from interacting on your turns. Although I guess like maybe Grand Abolisher is like an easier point of comparison because it's not symmetrical. So great way to keep your opponents from messing with your stuff. And it also just has this built-in card draw engine, which is pretty darn easy to pull off. So let's talk about what it means to have power greater than its base power. So if you have a 0/0 that enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it, well, its base power and toughness are 0/0. And because it has a +1/+1 counter, it has greater power than its base power. Other things that work, of course, are throwing equipment that boosts power, throwing on auras that boost power, even just running pump effects like Glorious Anthem or even like one-shot stuff like Triumph of the Hordes. There's also a lot of abilities in Magic that will like naturally grant power boosts to creatures, things like Training or Mentor. So there are a lot of ways to meet this condition. But as I was building this deck, in like my early drafts, I ran just as many creatures as possible that would naturally meet that requirement of giving themselves power greater than their base power. But over time, I found it was better if I just ran as many good creatures as possible in green and white, and then just ran a few ways to pump them up. Because there's so many ways to efficiently pump your creatures. You can just kind of like play a good stuff game where you run like your Mana Dorks and your Reclamation Sage, whatever, just like good cards in this color identity. And then at some point, you're going to drop like a flowering of the white tree, or you're going to put a +1/+1 counter on everything. You're going to find some way just to buff things. And then you're going to drop Kutsil and start drawing 3 cards a turn. So I think that is probably going to be better than just going hard on creatures that naturally meet the requirement. Because the problem with that kind of build, if just like every card in your deck is like an Arcbound Stinger or something, then the cards you draw are going to be really low quality. Like, you're just going to draw more Arcbound Stingers. You're going to have a handful of cards, but all those cards are going to be really embarrassing. So I'd rather do something where you're just running good cards, and like, you won't automatically be able to like drop Kutsil and get value on like turn 3 or 4, but you are going to be able to like make it so that when you do drop him, he will be good and the cards you draw will be good. And I think that's just a better plan. All right, moving on to the next commander. This is Sovereign Okanek Ahau. Again, apologies about pronunciation here. This is 2GW for a 3/4 legendary creature cat noble. It's got ward 2. And whenever Sovereign Okanek Ahau attacks, for each creature you control with power greater than that creature's base power, put a number of +1/+1 counters on that creature equal to the difference. This is playing in kind of the same design space. It cares about the same kinds of things as Kutsil does. One thing I like about Sovereign Okanek Ahau is that he can sort of like solidify future gains. If you just have like, say, a temporary pump effect or a pump effect that's tied to a permanent that can easily be removed, then Sovereign Okanek Ahau will like turn that into something more long term. So if I drop like a Benelish Marshal that gives all my other creatures +1/+1, and then I attack with my Sovereign, the Sovereign's going to put a +1/+1 counter on everything. And then if on my opponent's turn, they Doomblade my Benelish Marshal, well, Sovereign is still going to see this power buff from the counters that he provided, and he'll be able to continue to add counters to them in the future. And it really snowballs pretty quickly. You know, if you just like cast Overrun, give your guys +3/+3, Sovereign attacks, he gives them 3 +1/+1 counters. Then like next turn, he's going to add 3 more counters. Then it'll be 6, 12, so on. It seems just like very easy to get incredible power bonuses out of this guy. This is a really efficient anthem, provided you can just start the ball rolling. All right, moving on to the next commander. This is Amalia Benavides Aguirre. It is white black for a 2/2 legendary creature, Vampire Scout. She has ward, pay 3 life. And whenever you gain life, Amalia Benavides Aguirre explores, then destroy all other creatures if its power is exactly 20. So as a reminder, to explore, you reveal the top card of your library, you put it into your hand if it's a land card, otherwise you put a +1/+1 counter on the creature, and you can choose to put that card back on top of the library or into your graveyard. I think it's very easy to get her to explore a ton of times. Like, you're in color for things like Authority of the Consoles and Soul Warden and Soul's Attendant. There's a number of similar cards. I think you can easily get a ton of triggers in a very short amount of time. It is rather unfortunate that a lot of those cards I just mentioned are themselves creatures. So Amalia is going to murk all your enablers. That being said, they have mostly served their purpose if they can get her to that much power. Like, once she has 20 power, you're within spitting distance of just like one hit KOing your opponents. I think with this deck, you want to be running a lot of sort of one mana, like Blacksmith Skill, Lauren's Escape type cards, just like one mana ways to give her indestructible, give her hexproof, give her protection from colors, whatever, just so that you can protect her from your opponent's spot removal. Because really, like, spot removal is the only thing that will save them when her ability clears all the potential blockers out of the way. So I think this is going to be an efficient Voltron commander. I like that it's requiring a different subset of cards than most Voltron builds do. but it is like very vulnerable to spot removal. Okay, next card I'm going to be talking about is Carmen, Cruel Sky Marcher. This is coming from the Vampire Precon, and it's 3 white-black for a 2/2 legendary creature vampire soldier. She has flying, and whenever a player sacrifices a permanent, put a ++1 counter on Carmen, Cruel Sky Marcher, and you gain 1 life. Then whenever Carmen attacks, return up to 1 target permanent card with mana value less than or equal to Carmen's power from your graveyard to the battlefield. So I really like cards like this. Of course, I love Graveyard Recursion. I mean, I think the goal with Carmen is just like recurring Mindslaver. Once you've got her up to 6 power, you can just get back Mindslaver each combat and then keep somebody locked in the Mindslaver. I think that's going to be maybe the end game for your deck. But she also is going to grow really, really fast. You can build a mana base full of fetch lands to really pump her up. If your opponents are running fetches too, that's going to add counters to her. And then she can, of course, get back your fetch lands when she attacks if you just want to ramp further. And that will get you even more ++1 counters on her. So I think she grows very quickly. You can just try to Voltron with her to close out the game. As far as Voltron goes, she has flying. It won't be too hard to get her in there. You have access to efficient double strike granters, things like Duelist Heritage to further capitalize on how quickly she grows. So I think overall this is a strong commander. There's also like a lot of things in between fetch lands and Mindslaver that are just useful to bring back. I'm thinking things like, you know, Seal of Doom seems fine. And then, of course, if you're running like Sacrifice Outlets, then you can kind of turn anything into just like fodder for your reanimation engine. Like, you know, you run some kind of Sac Outlet, you run Ravenous Chupacabra, you sacrifice it, you bring it back with Carmen, you sacrifice it again, so on and so forth. She seems like a fun commander if you're really into recursion things. But I think from there, we can move on. Next up is the Myco Tyrant. It's 1 black-green for a star legendary creature, Elder Fungus. It has trample, and its power and toughness are each equal to the number of creatures you control that are fungi and or sapperlings. And at the beginning of your end step, create X11 black fungus creature tokens with this creature can't block, where X is the number of times you descended this turn. And as a reminder, you descend each time a permanent card is put into your graveyard from anywhere. Triggering descend could mean like sacrificing your fetch land. It could also mean you mill yourself with your Mesmeric Orb or any of the other self-mill cards in a black-green color identity. You could also go pretty ham with like Hermit Druid in this. You don't necessarily want to mill your entire library, but if you have just like a low basic count, you can get a ridiculous number of fungus tokens. Oh, it is worth mentioning, because descending requires a permanent card, it will not trigger when a token is put into anywhere. So you can't just easily, like, I make a bunch of tokens, then on my next turn, I sacrifice them all and get that many tokens again. No, it doesn't work like that. They've got to be physical cards, not just like pennies or whatever. Overall, I think this card is pretty sweet. It's a neat self-mill reward. I think that's probably the most efficient way to farm it really well. It does provide a lot of sac fodder, so you can run things like Attrition, things like Yawgmoth, things like Skullclamp. The tokens are conveniently X1s. You can try to win with just like turning the Myco Tyrant sideways as like a Voltron thing, but you're also just able to like hoof your opponents out, because I don't think it's going to be very difficult to accumulate enough fungi that Craterhoof can end the game by itself. All right, next up is Hackball of the Surging Soul. It is 2 green-blue for a 3/3 legendary creature, Merfolk Scout. At the beginning of combat on your turn, each Merfolk creature you control explores. Then whenever Hackball attacks, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. If you don't, draw a card. So this is a new take on Merfolk Typal. And I like it better than our existing options. Certainly, I like it better than the previous like green-blue merfolk typal commander from Rivals of Ixalan. Kumana, Tyrant of Orozca is of course, what I'm referring to. Kumana is 3 mana for a 2/4. You can tap an untapped merfolk you control to make it so that Kumana is unblockable this turn. You can tap 3 merfolk you control to draw a card, and you can tap 5 merfolk you control to put a +1/+1 counter on each merfolk you control. The issue I had with that card at the time, and that I still kind of have, it is requiring you to tap all your guys, and unless you have ways to untap them naturally, like a Marrow Commerce or something, like you don't get to grow and attack in the same turn, generally. That's not true with Hackball. Your guys are able to just grow from the Explore trigger, and then you can turn them sideways, and you kind of get to have your cake and eat it too. So I like what Hackball is doing. It works well, not only with the merfolk typal stuff you have, but also just with like Explore synergies. For example, there's a card in the set that says like, if a creature you control would explore, instead it explores, then explores again. There's a couple things like that work really well. You can put things into your graveyard if you want to like sort of go the graveyard synergy route. But I think this is overall a fairly simple typal deck. There's one or two things you can do. Like I really like the idea of putting Bread for the Hunt in this deck. Bread for the Hunt being 1 green blue for an enchantment. Whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. So kind of just like a cheaper version of Coastal Piracy for a deck that can consistently put +1/+1 counters on its guys. It's also nice that this deck is really, really good at hitting its land drops. You can run some things that like Exploration or whatever that make it so that you can ramp out all the extra lands you're pulling off the top of your library with your Explore triggers. Seems like a fun commander. I am glad he got printed. I think he's just a better option for people who really like Merfolk. Next is, Zola Toyak, the Smiling Flood. 4 green blue for a 6/6 legendary creature, Salamander Serpent. Whenever Zola Toyak, the Smiling Flood, enters the battlefield or attacks, put a flood counter on target land. That land is an island in addition to its other types for as long as it has a flood counter on it. At the beginning of your end step, untap each permanent you control with a counter on it. So I really like what this card is doing. It's giving you a couple things that are really useful in a blue-green color identity. So for one, it's providing a huge body, and that works really well with some of the green card draw effects. Your, say, Garruk Primal Hunter or your Return of the Wild Speaker, your Riskar's Expertise, so on and so forth. All these cards are just like incredibly efficient card draw. You're paying 5 or 6 mana and getting 6 cards. So that's really good. You're also getting a huge amount of mana from this untap effect. Granted, like you're going to need to invest a lot in instants in order to best make use of all that mana, but it still seems very strong. And there's a lot of other mana producers that naturally enter the battlefield with counters or naturally put counters on themselves. So in terms of lands, there's just a million of these. There's like Blast Zone, there's Land of War Reborn, Tendo Ice Bridge, the Monumental Facade, Trenzalore Clock Tower, Urza's Saga, Vivid Grove, Vivid Creek. So a lot of cards like that. And then there's others that like you've got to invest a little bit to get counters on them, like Crucible, the Spirit Dragon, Mage Ring Network. There's a lot of cards in that vein. There's also a lot of artifacts that add counters to themselves or come in with counters. Of course, like Everflowing Chalice, Astral Cornucopia, Midnight Clock. I've got a list in the episode description with a ton of ideas for you. One thing I also really like are auras that you put on lands and make them tap for more mana. So cards like Wild Growth or Market Festival, Overgrowth. All of these are fantastic when you can then just like put a flood counter on whatever land they're enchanting, and then you get that huge help in a mana twice per turn instead of just once. So you're in blue, you get access to some fantastic instant speed interaction in the form of counter spells and some good like creature spot removal. And then you also have good instant speed card draw as another means of using all the mana you're generating from Zulatoyak's untap trigger. Next up is Saheeli, the Sun's Brilliance. It's blue-red for a 2-2 legendary creature human artificer. She has blue-red tap. Create a token that's a copy of another target creature or artifact you control, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. It gains haste. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. So there are some fun things you can do with this. Time Stream Navigator was the first thing that came to mind. Time Stream Navigator, of course, being the 2-mana human pirate wizard. That's a 1-1. It has ascend. And then if you have the City's Blessing, you can pay 2 blue-blue, tap it, and put it on the bottom of its owner's library to take an extra turn after this one. So if you just have that sitting on the battlefield and then you keep activating Saheeli targeting the Time Stream Navigator, you can then activate the Token Navigator's ability, put it on the bottom of your library, and then take another turn. During that turn, Saheeli, of course, is going to untap. All your mana is going to untap. You can do it again. Infinite turns if you can get that going, although it's not the easiest color identity to search out a creature, even if that creature does happen to be a wizard. Other things you can do, if you have like a creature that's a tutor, then Saheeli can potentially use that to get like multiple cards that combo together. So like if you play a trophy mage, the first one can get like a basalt monolith, then you copy it with Saheeli, you get a Rings of Brighthearth, now you have infinite colorless mana. Presumably you can find a way to win the game from there, especially if you can like, you know, activate Saheeli again, get another trophy mage trigger, and then look for a 3-mana sink. So that could be something. There's a little bit of populate in like red. So you could potentially like copy a creature, then populate it, and then keep populating that token copy. You could also do some fun stuff with like Combat Celebrant, Port Razor, any of those creatures that like give you extra combat steps and untap all your guys. It's not infinite because you still need to spend the mana to activate Saheeli, but taking a lot of combat steps is probably going to be pretty close to winning you the game. Okay, moving on to Admiral Brass Unsinkable. This is 2 blue-black-red for a 3-3 legendary creature human pirate. When Admiral Brass enters the battlefield, mill 4 cards. And at the beginning of combat on your turn, you may return target pirate creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield with a finality counter on it. It has base power and toughness 4-4. It gains haste until end of turn. And as a reminder, if a creature with a finality counter on it would die, you exile it instead. So there are a couple ways in this color identity to remove the finality counters without much difficulty. Like if you can run a Nesting Grounds in your mana base, you can maybe throw in like a Power Conduit. If you want to go really deep, you can run like Hex Parasite or Thrall Parasite or Ferripede. All of those can repeatedly remove counters from your creatures. So there's options there that could open up some combo potential. If you have like Port Razor, which is the pirate that gives you extra combat steps when it connects with someone. If you have a Port Razor and a Sack Outlet and say like a Thrall Parasite or a Ferripede, you could potentially get infinite combat steps, but it doesn't seem incredibly easy to assemble. And maybe I should explain how that works. So you go to combat, you bring Port Razor from your graveyard to the battlefield, it gains haste, you hit somebody with it, it triggers, it's going to untap your creatures, and it's going to give you another combat step. Then you use your Thrall Parasite or your Ferripede to remove a finality counter from it, and then you sacrifice it to your Sack Outlet. Then you go to the next combat step that the Port Razor gave you, Admiral Brass is going to trigger again, you get your Port Razor back because it didn't get exiled, because it did not have a finality counter thanks to your Thrall Parasite or Ferripede. Like I said, might be hard to assemble. It is interesting that she makes the creatures 4-4, which I think encourages you to run smaller pirates than you otherwise might have. So maybe like you curve out with cheaper pirates, and then if they die, you don't care because Admiral Brass can bring them back. Worth noting, you're not going to be able to get like a huge amount of free mana off of this reanimation trigger, because, unfortunately, there just aren't that many expensive pirates. there's only four pirates that cost more than five mana. Because of sort of like what they were doing in Ixalan Limited, they're generally lower on the curve, and they don't tend to scale well with like getting more power. Becoming a 4-4 doesn't mean a whole lot for most of them, other than the fact that they're just dealing more damage. As a pirate type commander, I don't think I like her as much as, say, like a Malcolm partner pair or Ramirez de Pietro Pillager. I just think that like this reward doesn't align extremely well with what pirates are doing. Pirates aren't sacrificing themselves a ton. They don't really care about their power. Generally, they just want to like get in there. They just want to be evasive, and they want to curve out, and they want to like get a bunch of combat damage triggers. And that just works better with what like Ramirez de Pietro and Malcolm are doing. So I'm not crazy about this as a pirate type commander, but we already had so many options for pirate type that I get why they might want to move in a different direction than what we'd seen before. Next is Pantlaza, Sun Favored. It is 2 red, green, white for a 4-4 legendary creature dinosaur. Whenever Pantlaza or another dinosaur enters the battlefield under your control, you may discover X, where X is that creature's toughness. Do this only once each turn. So this is certainly a different flavor of dinosaur type deck than, say, Gishath was. This wants you to run high toughness dinosaurs, and it wants to cast like one of them per turn. You are going to get like a free card and some free mana each turn, but it seems like pretty slow. Gishath is really a lot more explosive in what he's doing. Like, you know, you get to 8 mana, you connect, and then you get like multiple enormous dinosaurs straight onto the battlefield. The value you get in terms of like cards and mana per turn just seems a lot higher with Gishath. I mean, granted, he is a lot more expensive, but I just don't find Pantlaza very exciting as a dinosaur type reward. That being said, I do find it exciting as a really goofy combo deck. So I have a list in the episode description. I recommend you check it out. Basically, Pantlaza has a way to cast your entire library and combo off. So what you do is you fill your deck with Impact Tremors and as many like flicker spells as possible that return the creature like immediately to the battlefield. You basically mulligan until you get any non-land card. You mulligan until you hit your Cloud Shift or whatever. And then you play Pantlaza. You get your Discover trigger. So you're going to start flipping cards through your library until you hit a flicker effect. The flicker effect is going to target Pantlaza. It's going to leave the battlefield. It's going to come back. And then because it's a new object, it's going to trigger again, and you're going to get to discover again. Well, eventually you're going to hit a long string of flicker effects, and then eventually you're going to hit Impact Tremors. And then Impact Tremors is going to stop the chain because it doesn't blink the Pantlaza. And that's when you cast like the Cloud Shift that you mulligan for, or the Ephemerate you mulligan for, the Flicker of Fate, the Justiciar's Portal, whatever. Whatever card you ended up in your opening hand, that's when you cast it targeting the Pantlaza, and then you start the chain again. And now you're going to go through your entire library. You're going to cast all of the flicker effects that cost 4 or less. And included among those are Restoration Angel, Icewind Stalwart, and Felidar Guardian, all of which allow you to blink other permanents you control. The first one that enters, the Felidar Guardian or whatever, is going to blink Pantlaza. But then once you hit the next one, once you hit like your Restoration Angel after you already have the Felidar Guardian on the battlefield, then you're going to start having them flicker each other. And then Impact Tremors is going to kill the table. You've just got your Felidar Guardian and your Restoration Angel blinking themselves infinitely, returning themselves immediately, and then Impact Tremors just ping, 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 all your opponents are dead. This is definitely like a gimmick deck. This is kind of a joke deck because it folds really quickly to like any kind of interaction, really. But for like a funny haha joke deck, it's also incredibly cheap to play. Like all of the non-land cards in this deck, aside from Pantlaza, are worth a total of about $15. So if you just want like a funny deck to break out once in a while, might be the right commander for you. Moving on to the next one. This is Weta, Trainer Prodigy. Red, green, white for a 1/5 legendary creature human warrior with haste. It has 2 and a green tap. Target creature you control fights another target creature. This ability costs 2 less to activate if it targets 2 creatures you control. And then if a creature you control being dealt damage causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. So clearly, this is supposed to be a deck for all your Enrage cards. But what I think might be more fun is if you build it as a combo deck. So there's a lot of cards. Well, okay, maybe not a lot. There's a handful of cards, like, say, Boros Reckoner, that have the text, whenever Boros Reckoner is dealt damage, it deals that much damage to any target. So if you have a creature like that on the battlefield, and you have your Weta Trainer Prodigy on the battlefield, and you have any card that can grant a creature indestructible, so that could be Lauren's Escape, it could be Sheltering Light, whatever. You just need some way to grant the Boros Reckoner indestructible. And then you activate your Weta, you have a way to fight the Boros Reckoner. The Reckoner is going to get one trigger when it's dealt damage. Then Weta is going to give you an additional trigger. So you're going to have 2 instances of 1 damage that the Boros Reckoner is able to deal. So you're going to deal 1 damage to your opponent's face, and you're going to deal the other damage to itself. So you ping your opponent for 1, it hits itself, and then it triggers again twice. So you get to keep doing that. It keeps pinging itself, it keeps pinging your opponents. Because we granted it indestructible, it's not going to die. And you get to keep doing that over and over until all of your opponents are dead. Because you're in a green color identity, you're in really good colors for creature tutors. So you can pretty easily find your Boros Reckoner and your Spite Mare and all the other cards that do this thing. And then there already is like easily a critical mass of just like 1 mana target creature gains indestructible until end of turn. That's like definitely not the limiting factor here. So I think you can really consistently pull that off, and it's naturally going to be quite good once you do. So could be a fun combo deck. We've got a list for that in the episode description, so check that out. But the next commander is Tetsun, Gnome Champion. It is blue, red, white for a 2/2 legendary artifact creature gnome. Whenever Tetsun or another double-faced artifact enters the battlefield under your control, mill 3 cards. You may put an artifact card from among them into your hand. And Tetsun has craft with 6 artifacts for 4 mana. So craft with 6 artifacts, 4, means you can pay 4 and exile this artifact and exile 6 artifacts from among other permanents you control and or cards in your graveyard. And if you do that, you get to return this card to the battlefield transformed under its owner's control. So if you craft Tetsun with 6 artifacts, then you get the Golden Gear Colossus. It's a 6/6 legendary artifact creature gnome with vigilance and trample. And whenever it enters the battlefield or attacks, you transform up to 1 other target double-faced artifact you control. Then create 2 1/1 colorless gnome artifact creature tokens. There are 45 double-faced artifacts in this color identity, and in order to have an 80% chance of hitting off of Tetsun's trigger, you know, whenever Tetsun or another DFC artifact enters the battlefield, mill 3 cards and get an artifact from among them into your hand. In order to hit out of those 3 cards, or at least to have an 80% chance to hit off of those 3 cards, you got to run at least 41 DFC artifacts. So basically, you have no choice at all in terms of what you can run. You basically got to run everything. And if you have any wiggle room at all to cut stuff, you'll probably just cut the most expensive things. There are some incredibly expensive DFC artifacts in like the Transformers. Like some of them cost like 5 or 6 mana or something. Also worth noting, incubate tokens will trigger Tetsun, Gnome Champion. You definitely want to run like Chrome Host Seed Shark, because you've got a lot of non-creature spells in this deck, and every incubate token is another trigger and another way to hit other cards that will keep the engine going. There's a handful of cost reduction effects in this color identity. You know, you've got your Ethereum Sculptor, you've got your Enthusiastic Mechanaut, you've got a couple ways to make the combo engine go a little more smoothly. And then you probably also want to be running things like Mirrodin Besiege or Fishing Construction, Saheeli Sublime Artificer, just ways to like get more value and like get something of use as you're casting these crappy DFC artifacts and like churning through your deck. Because a lot of them are just straight terrible cards. You're really not feeling great about yourself when you're putting like neglected heirlooms and mystic skulls in your deck. But it's fun. I like this type of deck, just playing tons of cards. And because you're like churning through your deck like this and getting just tons of artifacts onto the battlefield, it really is not that hard to get the six artifacts necessary to craft Tetsun into his reverse form. And a few of these like DFC artifacts do actually have like potent effects on the reverse side. So getting the Golden Gear Colossus's ETB or attack trigger and then transforming something that like does something crazy on the reverse actually seems pretty good. Depending on what you're transforming, that could be like a mechanism for you to win the game. Certainly a very strange commander, certainly doing something different than any other deck in the format. I think he's really cool. It's a unique deck building restriction. If you just like casting a lot of cards and milling yourself for crazy, he's really good for that. The last new commander I'm going to be talking about today is Javier Sol, Infected Captain. He is black, blue, green for a 3/3 legendary creature, Human Fungus Pirate. He has tap, remove a counter from another permanent you control, populate, activate only as a sorcery. And populate means create a token that's a copy of a creature token you control. He also has tap, sacrifice another creature, proliferate, activate only as a sorcery. And proliferate, of course, is choose any number of permanents and/or players, give each another counter of each kind already there. So I think one of these abilities is a lot more powerful than the other. Although you could certainly build this commander either way. You can definitely fill out a Javier Sol deck with poison grainers and sack fodder, maybe some infect creatures. You could run things like Everflowing Chalice, things that really want lots of counters on them, planeswalkers. There's certainly a lot of planeswalkers that produce tokens that you can then sack to Javier to proliferate your planeswalkers. So that is itself an entire archetype that you could easily make work. But I was way more interested in the first half of the card. So there are not very many cards in Magic that can repeatedly remove counters from things. And having one in the command zone seems really, really valuable because it means you can like constantly get the same chapter over and over on, say, a saga. Or you can, you know, constantly remove an age counter from something with cumulative upkeep like a Mystic Remora, and you'll be able to keep it around forever. So even the cost, I think, is pretty useful. And then the effect of populating can also be really powerful depending on what you're populating. So you could do something like, oh, I'm just going to make a 6/6 token off of my Crush of Worms or something and then populate it over and over. But what I think is potentially like a lot more fun is using cards that create tokens that are copies of creatures and then populating those. So just like filling your deck with, you know, quasi-duplicate, Rite of Replication, Stolen Identity, all that nonsense. And then you run like a couple creatures that if you happen to copy them and populate them, they just go off. One of them is Time Stream Navigator. I mentioned that earlier when we were talking about Saheeli, but that's a fantastic one to make a token copy of and then populate every turn because it's just going to, you're going to be able to continue to activate it, take an extra turn after this one. And then on that turn, you activate Javier again, you make another copy of your Time Stream Navigator token and you go from there. So that seems extremely powerful. That basically just wins you the game. If you want to do like a more fair game, you can make a token copy of a Grave Merchant of Asphodel and keep populating that. You're going to get more and more devotion each time. You're going to get drained for bigger and bigger amounts. You can copy your Kokosho, keep the token around and let the original one die, and then keep populating the token just to give that huge life swing every single turn. Another thing you could do is make a bunch of copies of Biovisionary and then just win the game on your upkeep. There's a lot of stuff that seemed really fun. I personally really like copying Risen Reef. Risen Reef is one green blue for a 1/1 creature elemental. When Risen Reef or another elemental enters the battlefield under your control, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you may put it onto the battlefield tapped. If you don't put it onto the battlefield, you put it into your hand. So, you know, you play your Risen Reef, you get your trigger, maybe you get a land, maybe you just draw a card, then you copy it, and then the copy will, of course, have its own ETB trigger, but it'll also trigger the original Risen Reef. So you get to look at the top two cards and put any lands out. And then if you start populating that token copy, now you're getting three Risen Reef triggers, and you're getting four Risen Reef triggers. It's just enormous amounts of cards that you're getting off of this as you make more copies. Another fun thing, if you're naturally running a ton of like writer replication, quasi-duplicate, blah, 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 all those types of effects, then Mirror Mad Phantasm becomes really good. Because Mirror Mad Phantasm is a creature that has the ability, one in a blue, Mirror Mad Phantasm's owner shuffles it into his or her library. If that player does, he or she reveals cards from the top of that library until a card named Mirror Mad Phantasm is revealed. That player puts that card on the battlefield, and all other cards revealed this way into his or her graveyard. So if you make a token copy of Mirror Mad Phantasm and then activate the token's ability, you shuffle it into your library, you mill until you hit a card named Mirror Mad Phantasm, but there aren't any. Like, the token just poofs once you try to shuffle it away, but you still get to mill yourself out, and then there's a couple ways you can win from there. In my list, which link to in the episode description, in my list, I use Nexus of Fate, which is just 7 mana, blue instant, take an extra turn after this one. If it would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, reveal Nexus of Fate and shuffle it into its owner's library instead. So if you mill yourself out, then Nexus of Fate puts itself back, and then you can just cast Nexus of Fate every turn for the rest of the game and take infinite turns. And then hopefully you can find a way to win the game from there. There's other ways too. You can run like a Thassa's Oracle and something like a Dread Return or From the Catacombs, just like reanimation spells that are active in your graveyard, and try to win that way. It seems fine too. But I really like this deck. Definitely seems like a fun one. If I had to say like one especially challenging thing about it, I think you got to build your deck carefully so that you have enough counters just lying around to pay Javier's costs. Maybe invest in like sagas, or maybe you want to just like run lands that naturally enter the battlefield with counters on them, something like that. But that was a pinch point I was noticing as I was building the deck, is just getting enough counters to do the populating thing. And of course, I'm curious about the folks who try to take Javier in the opposite direction. If you have a cool list where you're doing more the like sacrificing and proliferating thing, definitely share it, because I'd like to see how other people are building around this commander. All right, that is the last one. That is all the most exciting, most interesting commanders, I think, from Lost Caverns of Ixalan or the Lost Caverns of Ixalan commander precons. If you think one of the ones I skipped is really compelling, please share your list with me. I'm curious to see how people are building them. But I hope this truncated version of a commander set review was still interesting and informative. And stay tuned next week, because we're going to be going through all these main deck cards. There's a lot of really exciting stuff. I think white especially did really well this set, but we'll get into that later. Before we go, I'm going to give a brief shout out to my Patreon patrons. They are Gustav, Ryan, Addison, Rick, Raphael, Kyle, Laser, Charlotte, Hannah, Andy, James, Bryce, Benjamin, Brandon, Kydell, Jeremy, Russell, Dylan, John, John, Micah, Troy, Roxanne, Daniel, Andrew, Jason, Paul, Johan, Jonathan, Christian, Jim, Andrea, Vasilios, Logan, Frugalbrutal, Carl, Oscar, Danny B, Jean-Francois, Drew, Recta, Nick, BJ, Cameron, Valerio, Quincy, Carrie, Stephen, The Longs, Vincent, Maceo, Dylan, Cameron, Icy Wiener, Aiden, Scott, 16 Bitcoin, Alex, Andreas, Brian, Christian, Cass, Shane, Amund, and Jeffrey. Thank you all for supporting the show. And if you're not currently a Patreon patron, but would like to become one, please check me out at patreon.com/commandertheory. Thanks for listening. You can reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Commander Theory.
And on Twitter, I am at Fat Bartleby.
You can also email us at commandertheory@gmail.com. Our theme song is Lincoln Continental by Nick Cage. You can check him out on SoundCloud.
And if you're interested in some other creative projects I'm working on, I have a band you can check out. We are a pink punk, pop punk band called The Have Nots, all one word, like cosmonauts. You can listen to all of our music for free right now. You can just head over to thehavenauts.bandcamp.com. That is thehavenauts.bandcamp.com. And check us out. Let me know what you think.